Köszöntöm ezeket, szervusztok! Ezen a héten Európa választ, mára pedig elfogadta meghívásunkat a német zöld párt európai parlamenti képviselője, Daniel Freund, akinek több magyar jogállamisággal, korrupcióval kapcsolatos kezdeményezés is fűződik a nevéhez, rendszeresen jár Magyarországon is. Hogy hogyan választotta ezt legfontosabb ügyének EP képviselőként, miért vett részt az Európai Bizottságnak a magyar pénzek részleges feloldásáért való beperlésében, és egyáltalán mit szól a német nehézipar és Orbán szimbiózisáról szóló kritikákhoz? Nos, mindenről személyesen őt fogom kérdezni. Az interjút június 3-án, hétfő délelőtt rögzítettük, most pedig angolra vártok. Hello, Mr. Freund, thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, good morning.
So you have a background in anti-corruption NGO work and immediately became a member of the Committee on Budgetary Control after you first got elected in 2019. Was it immediately obvious to you that your main focus in that role had to be on Hungary, or did your attention shift to it gradually? And if so, for what reasons?
I mean, I haven't been working only on Hungary. I fight corruption wherever it occurs, in all member states where there are corruption problems, but of course also inside the EU institutions themselves, that we make sure that the European Parliament is free of corruption as well. But I have a background. I came from Transparency International, where I led the EU work before, so I knew that Hungary is the most corrupt member state in the EU, unfortunately.
Wow, that's very harsh criticism.
That is just the reality. If you look at the rankings, I mean, Transparency International is doing every year a ranking based on data from all kinds of research institutes. And we have seen, unfortunately, in the last 14 years, a decline of Hungary in that ranking. And by now, out of the 27 EU member states, Hungary is at the bottom of that ranking.
Your current ongoing initiative is a petition to the president of the council, Charles Michel, to block Hungary's rotating presidency of the EU. I understand your political criticism for Viktor Orbán, but are there any legal grounds on which this can be done without setting a precedent of resolving political conflicts in this way?
So this is not a political question for me. This is, you know, member states that no longer fulfill the criteria of being a functioning democracy, where we have all kinds of procedures ongoing for violation of fundamental values. Most of the EU funds for Hungary are blocked because of issues with rule of law and corruption. And I think a member state that in a way doesn't fulfill the membership criteria of the European Union and therefore has much of its EU funding blocked, should not hold the rotating presidency. So the member states could adopt with a qualified majority the rule that a member state under the so-called Article 7 procedure, so violating the fundamental values and where money is frozen under the conditionality, that such a member state cannot hold the presidency. And as soon as Hungary fulfills those criteria, they can take up their presidency. So this is not because I disagree politically with the current government. This is because, well, currently the Hungarian government doesn't fulfill the basic principles of EU membership.
But aren't you afraid that if this petition will be successful, it can backfire on you or on the entire EU, because Orbán can say with confidence that right now, you know, this is the result of such a political fight which I'm trying to achieve, and he can pose as a kind of a victim of European elites?
Well, that's what he has been trying to say for years. I think the risk of backfiring is much larger, that all citizens in those other member states, but actually including Hungarian citizens, are seeing that the EU for far too long has basically ignored that EU funds are being stolen in Hungary by Viktor Orbán's friends and family, that Hungary is no longer respecting the fundamental rights of its citizens, you know, for democracy, for rule of law, for a free and independent media. So if we don't do anything about that, I think that will backfire, and people are losing trust in the EU if those attacks on the EU are not sanctioned.
Do you believe that the conditionality mechanism is a legal process that could be enforced with consistency? Or was it always designed to be a tool to apply political pressure on Orbán and tackle his disruptive activity?
It is a legal tool. And that has indeed been confirmed by the European Court of Justice. There are clear criteria, you know, where the rule of law, where the fight against corruption is analyzed. And any member state where a corruption problem develops in such a way, you know, I would advocate that the conditionality needs to be used, regardless of, you know, what the political party affiliation, what membership in which European party. I criticize corruption really everywhere, and the Parliament and the European Commission have been reasonably consistent with that as well. It's not because someone is left or right or this party or that party. It's because someone attacks the rule of law and is corrupt that we use these kind of tools.
But you have criticism for how the Commission applies it, right?
Yeah, I think so far they are not using it enough. As I said, I think the corruption problem is largest in Hungary, but there are issues in other member states. And I think the Commission and the EU in general should really go after these problems wherever they occur. We should not wait in a way until the situation has deteriorated as much as it has, unfortunately, in Hungary. But there are other member states, you know, where there are issues with the rule of law, with corruption, where I think this conditionality mechanism, but also the other tools that the Commission has, should be used more to protect all our common interest and our money.
But why would that be a problem if you or other European politicians would say that, yes, this is a political tool because this is a political community and Viktor Orban and Hungary is part of it. And if they don't agree on the common rules, then they have to face serious or certain consequences?
Well, for me, that is not a political line. I think that is the basic agreement in the European Union, and the application then of such a tool is more legalistic, if you want. There are clear legal criteria. When can this be used and when can it not be used? So I would argue that this is more a legal than a political tool. At the end of the day, of course, in political institutions, in the Commission, in Parliament, you know, decisions have to be taken with majorities. So there is, of course, a political element to trigger things. But this is all based on clear legal rules that constitute these tools.
I really don't like to defend Viktor Orban's policy, but he can say with confidence that maybe this legal framework was kind of, so there was a kind of a consensus behind this legal framework when we joined to the EU back in 2004, but 20 years passed, and right now maybe there are certain questions which should be opened up again and which would be open up for debate. So why would that be a problem if that would be a political debate and not a legal process?
I mean, for that, there is no problem whatsoever. If you want to change legislation in the European Union, you know, he is free and he should put forward his reform ideas. If he wants to change the treaties, he can do that as well. And there is a mechanism how you change the treaties of the European Union. Indeed, as Parliament, we have initiated a procedure by which we want to change the basic rules of the Union, and everyone is free to vote, to argue on those however they like. What you cannot do is, under the current rules, just not apply them anymore and say, well, I have now decided differently and I'm not going to play by those EU rules anymore. Then, you know, if you break the law, if you break the rules, then there are sanctions that go with that. And one more argument why I think this really isn't a political thing. When the decision was taken to freeze the Hungarian funds under the conditionality, it was 25 governments out of the 27 that voted in favor. Governments that represent the extreme right, the conservatives, social democrats, the liberals, the very left. So there were really all political party families that exist in the European Parliament that were involved in this decision. So arguing that this is some sort of left conspiracy, as Orban often does, is simply not true.
Of course not, but it still sounds to me as a kind of a political disagreement between you and the Hungarian government. And I don't think that politicizing the EU would be a problem. I think it would just empower the democratic nature of the EU. But maybe we don't agree on this.
Yeah.
Okay, so in the past you have criticized Viktor Orban not only for his vetoing of funds for Ukraine, but also for his threat to veto the 50% minimum tax directive. Famously, Hungary's corporate tax rate is a mere 9%, with many multinational companies also receiving individual tax breaks or so-called job creation benefits. My question is, do you believe that these benefits German companies and the German economy?
So, I mean, my criticism of Viktor Orban's behavior on the minimum corporate tax is not so much based on the actual underlying argument, how high should that tax be? But Orban never had a problem with this minimum corporate tax until the very final vote. This has been a discussion that has been ongoing for many years. The Hungarian government has never signaled any issue with that. But when it came to the final ratification, basically the moment that the Polish government gave up its veto, then Orban stepped up and said, well, now I want to veto this, saying at the same time, look, we haven't received the EU funds that Orban thinks should come without any kind of reforms on the rule of law. And so my impression was very much this was not about the underlying issue. This was that he had a pressure point where he felt he could, in a way, blackmail the rest of the EU to get something he wanted on a completely unrelated question. And that is what I criticize, that I am also in favor of us, you know, not lowering the corporate tax rate to zero, which is happening so far in lots of member states.
Yeah.
Well, that's a different question.
Okay, but let me expand on this. So as you know, BMW, Mercedes, Opel, and Audi either operate or are currently constructing production capacities in Hungary, where the country's automotive industry is already 59% owned by German companies, because Prime Minister Orbán creates very favorable conditions for them, including not only low corporate tax rates and benefits, but also the dismantlement of workers' rights. And Orbán arguably relies on these economic relations to sustain his economy and cement his political position even more than he does on EU funds. So my question is, what do you think about the general criticism that the German economy actually relies heavily on lacking labor rights and low wages in Hungary and other countries, specifically in the heavy industry sector? So what can the EU do in order to stop this?
Well, one thing is that we agree on certain European standards, for example, for workers' rights, for example, on taxation. I would be very much in favor, you know, that competition among EU countries does not lead to an ever lower tax rate for corporations so that they no longer contribute to our general society. I would not like to see workers' rights dismantled. So I think EU standards are a good way there. I think we also need to talk to those companies. You know, we see that, yes, the automotive industry is doing very well, but other European companies in other sectors, in construction, in banking, in telecommunications, are being attacked. The Orban policy of, well, bringing Hungarian players into those industries basically means that EU players are heavily discriminated, get special taxes or levies, and basically get sometimes robbed of their Hungary business with mafia methods, because, well, then someone that's somehow related or a friend of Orban is making lowball price offers, and the government is then putting so much pressure that they're taking over those businesses. So all the companies in Hungary need to be aware, you know, that there is no independence of the judiciary. There is no rule of law where they can rely on being able to do good business in the future. So we all have an interest, you know, that EU rules are applied, that the rule of law works, and that there is an independent judiciary for everyone in Hungary.
Yes, but there is another side of this criticism, saying that the European Parliament can send very harsh criticism towards to Orban, but has very little power in its hand to change anything within the frames of the European Union. So what do you think? What can be changed in the upcoming 5 years in the European Parliament?
So, I mean, we have already shown that we're capable of, you know, freezing money, withholding money. I think that is a powerful tool. I think the other thing that we can do or could do if the political majorities were there are to take the voting rights from the Hungarian government, because they violate the fundamental values of the union. That's the so-called Article 7 procedure. And I think we need to seriously consider that. If we have been discussing about these reforms that are necessary for many years now, we have seen very little results in Hungary. So if there is no willingness to reform, then the pressure needs to be increased. That's why I'm also putting into question that Hungary should hold the rotating presidency of the EU.
So you are still believing that freezing funds for the Hungarian government can result in real political change in the behavior, political behavior of the Orbán government?
Yeah, and I would argue that we have seen it work in the case of Poland. You know, the pressure from the EU, not alone, but it has contributed to, you know, a public debate where Polish citizens in the end have decided that they would like to see a change in government because they no longer want that kind of confrontation with the EU. They would like to see EU funds coming to their country, being invested in fast internet in rural areas, renovation of schools, renewable energies, all those things that we do with EU funds. So we've seen it work in Poland. Whether, you know, the attack on democracy is so far progressed in Hungary that it can no longer work, I don't know, but we need to try with everything we have.
Yes, but from the Hungarian perspective, it seems like this, that the Hungarian government doesn't have access to the EU funds, but they can get this money from the market through state bonds. And right now, the Hungarian central bank has to pay an enormous amount of money to fund the tax rate, the rates of these bonds. So eventually, the Hungarian government still has the money, but they have less money for example, schools, social systems, and so on and so on. So at the end of the day, the Hungarian taxpayers have to pay and foot the bill.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I mean, we cannot change the Hungarian government. We cannot change the behavior of Viktor Orbán. That is the responsibility of Hungarian citizens. They can decide.
I'm not talking about changing the Hungarian government. I'm just saying that if you put this into the context, do you still believe that freezing these funds would lead to more democratic, environment in Hungary?
I think this can work, but this is not the only objective of what we're doing here. I'm first and foremost responsible to protect the interest of EU taxpayers. And if I know that a substantial share of the EU funds that currently go to Hungary are being stolen, well, I cannot let that happen. I have a responsibility to all those taxpayers in all the EU member states, okay, including Hungarians. So whether we can restore democracy in Hungary, well, I hope so, but time will tell. But I can definitely protect EU taxpayer money by not sending it into a corrupt system of Viktor Orbán.
Understandable. So just one more question about the German government. So do you believe there is anything the German government can do or should do to disincentivize German economic actors from taking advantage of and at the same time helping to sustain Orbán's regime?
I think there needs, at the very least, to be a clear communication what the risks are. You know, as I said, I have heard from many companies in the last few years, you know, that have either lost their business in Hungary or are about to lose it. And I think all players going to Hungary, need to be aware of that risk. And actually, German business associations at this point are recommending to their members not to invest in Hungary because of the rule of law uncertainties, because of the corruption, because of the, you know, in a way, the volatility of Hungarian government action. This is so far working out well, as you said, in the automotive sector, but in many other sectors, it's not. And I think that needs to be made clear to all companies that there is a huge risk today with investing in Hungary in that environment.
Okay, we briefly have touched this issue or this question before, but I would like to bring back it again for another round. So Hungarians sometimes note that when European sanctions or criticism against Orbán intensify, I have to say he's usually able to use this for his own domestic political gain. So you end up strengthening him. Do you believe you have responsibility to take this into account when you are addressing him, when you are criticizing him?
Absolutely. We are taking that into account, where someone like me is trying, of course, still to get through to Hungarians. It's not easy because most of the media in Hungary are controlled by Orban or one of his allies. But at the end of the day, me as a member of the European Parliament, I have a responsibility to all EU citizens and voters, right? So the sanctions are not only there in a way to sanction Hungarians, but also to protect all the other Europeans, their money and their fundamental values. So that has to be taken into account as well.
In your view, is there any circumstance under which Hungary should receive EU funds without a fundamental change in government?
Well, as soon as whatever government in Hungary respects the fundamental values, the rule of law, and restores a system that is not corrupt, then any government, be it Orban or someone else, should receive EU funds. But as long as corruption is there, as long as there is no independent judiciary, the money should remain frozen.
Okay, and finally, let's talk about the Green Party, the Greens, because 2019 was an excellent election year for the Greens in Germany and, let's say, across Europe. What has been the biggest achievement and the biggest failure of the Greens parliamentary group in the past 5 years?
I think the successes that we have very much contributed to is the Green Deal, that we have an ambitious plan now to transform European economy and society into a climate neutral future over the next 20-25 years. I also think that our work on protecting European democracy has been quite successful. The failures, I mean, possibly that on both those, we haven't been able to do enough yet. You know, we haven't halted climate change. We haven't managed to restore democracy in all member states. So work remains to be done, and we're fighting for that now in these elections and after.
Your party is polling around 50% in the latest polls, as opposed to the 20.5% you received last time around. And the same trend can be seen in other countries, with Politico projecting a mere 41 seats, as opposed to the current 74 in the new EU Parliament. So what do you think the Green politics should do to turn that trend around?
I mean, the election hasn't happened yet. We will see next Sunday where the tally stands. And I'm actually fairly optimistic that in a number of member states where so far we haven't been as present, we will be in the future. Our internal numbers show that particularly in Eastern Europe, where so far we had reasonably few members, there's a number of MEPs coming, sometimes from new parties, actually including from Hungary. And so let's see how the election goes. I think the more important question will then be what coalition will govern the EU, what coalition will elect the next Commission president. And we are working very much to be part of that coalition, to continue with the Green Deal, to continue our fight for democracy and the rule of law. So yeah, we might lose a few MEPs, but we might actually end up being a bigger determining factor for the EU as a whole after the election.
And my last and final question to you, should Ursula von der Leyen remain the president of the Commission if she emerges as the Spitzenkandidat of the largest parliamentary group? If not, in what do you think the new president of the Commission should be selected?
So, I mean, I'm fighting for a strong Green Party now, and we have our lead candidates, Terry Reinke and Bas Eickhout. But obviously, after the election, the biggest group traditionally gets the first shot at forming a coalition. We stand ready, as I said, to be part of that coalition, but only if this coalition is made up of pro-European and democratic groups. We will not go into any kind of alliance with the extreme right, with anti-European parties. So I think that will be the battle after the election. And if Ursula von der Leyen comes out on top and is willing to form a coalition with us, then I think there is a chance that Greens will vote for her. But if she wants to govern with Meloni or other extreme right parties, then she cannot count on our votes. I think that's generally the line that we as Greens defend.
Yeah, but you as the Greens, do you have any idea or, I don't know, recommendation or even demand in what way the new president of the Commission should be selected?
Well, I mean, the normal thing in a parliamentary democracy when, you know, one party cannot govern alone, which is the norm outside of Hungary, I would say, that there is a coalition agreement that forms. And then we have our demands on climate, on nature protection, on a more social Europe, on democracy. And then we will, at the end, negotiate, you know, are we getting enough out of this coalition? Then we vote for it. Or if we don't, well, then we're happy to join the opposition and fight for our values and our program.
So you as the Greens are open to support Ursula von der Leyen if she would like to run for a second mandate, if certain political demands from your party, your coalition, would be taken into account.
Exactly.
Daniel Freund, member of the European Parliament for the Green Party of Germany, thank you very much for joining us and thank you for your time.
Thanks. Bye.
Nektek pedig köszönöm szépen a figyelmeteket, ez volt az interjú Daniel Freund EP képviselővel a választások hetén. Ne felejtjétek, hogy ahogy az EP, úgy az önkormányzati választásokról is élőben beszámolunk és szakértőkkel elemezzük is a látottakat, vasárnap már a délutáni óráktól kezdve. Sőt, a szombati nagygyűlést is élőben követjük, tartsatok tehát velünk, hamarosan találkozunk, addig is ciao.